Welcome to the Stabbin' Stylists Podcast. I'm Randa.
And I'm Ashley.
We are just two stylists who love true crime and hair, and we're going to tell you about both.
This is a true crime podcast. These stories may be disturbing to some. Listener discretion is advised. Guys,
hey y'all. Okay, let us up front, I guess. This is take two on this one because the first time we recorded it for an hour, guess what? There was no audio.
None.
Oh, Jesus, take the wheel. Which is, okay, it's funny that this happened today because coincidentally, she has been having like a lot of paranormal activity stirred up in her house today. So if that was the ghost, not funny.
Not cool, because that almost made me cry.
I guess today, well, I'm going to tell you again, but for the first time for you, there is definitely a reason why we do or we don't take pictures of somebody's hair. And it might not be what you think. Like, a lot of times for me, I try to take pictures of what I'm trying to market, the client that I'm trying to attract. So I like to do a lot of rainbow colored vivids. And so that's what I take the most pictures of, and some lived in hair. I do take some pictures of some like lived in color because I do enjoy that as well. But if you're like maybe like a just a regular root touch up, I'm not necessarily gonna, you know, take a picture of that because that's not what I'm marketing right now.
That's kind of like if we posted a case from New York on our Instagram. That's
right,
what we
like,
do.
It just wouldn't make any sense, right? So that's probably reason number one. The second just comes down to time. Sometimes I just do not have time and I feel really bad like making another client wait, unless they're just like majorly early. I mean, if they're 30 minutes early and I still got time, I will have you go ahead and wait your turn while I take pictures.
Don't get there more than 15 minutes early.
Yeah. Yeah. 15 minutes early is fine because most of the time I am ready for you about 15 minutes or 5 to 15.
30 minutes early stresses me out.
Yeah. 30 minutes early makes me feel like I'm like a little bit rushed, you know. But yeah, I'll probably just have you wait 15 minutes if you're 30 minutes early. But yeah, so it really comes time, whether you're, it's not that like we don't like your hair or we don't think that your hair is like worthy, because let me tell you this, I'm not gonna let you out of my chair if I think that your hair looks bad. You know, you're gonna have to stay till we fix it
at night if it's nighttime when you leave.
If the lighting's just not good, you know, and then that's usually when I'm like, hey, take a selfie later and I'm gonna share it to my story.
Yeah,
you know,
tag me in it,
something like that. So it's never because we think that your hair looks bad. It just might not be the right time, sis.
Or, I mean, honestly, there's been times that I've taken pictures and they looked great when I was taking them and I went back and there was like a glare or lighting was off or something like that.
Or you don't see the color like you did in person, so you feel weird about posting it.
So the picture's not accurate to what you did.
Exactly.
So it's not you, it's us.
100% baby girls, we love you still so much. And listen, if you ever want me to like take a picture of your hair just for you, like on your phone, I will absolutely do that too.
Yeah,
you know, I don't mind.
I do that a lot.
Yeah. And then a lot of times when I do post a picture, people will say, can you send me that picture? And girl, that it's a picture of you. Why would I not send it to you?
I get so nervous having to hold other people's phone to take the picture though.
Oh, yeah.
I get weird so about nervous. It. Yeah. I hate that so much.
Because that's like a grand in your hand.
I always
drop it.
Hold it with two hands.
I'm like, yeah. Like a grandma.
Yeah.
Trigger warning, this episode contains graphic crime.
So, yeah. All right. Take two.
Here we go. All right, y'all.
What are you telling us about today, Randa?
We're going to talk about Bardstown, Kentucky. Bardstown, Kentucky is a small little town in Nelson County, Kentucky, with a population of 13,567 people. It is known for bourbon. Well, yeah, Kentucky bourbon, duh, right? So I think they make Maker's Mark and a couple other brands there, but Maker's Mark was pretty much the one that I was like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, I don't drink bourbon, so I could be wrong. There might be a more important one there, but hey, here we are. And it was named America's Most Beautiful Small Town in 2012. There are also 5 unsolved murders in Bardstown, and they kick off with Jason Ellis May 25th of 2013.
A year after they were voted
Most beautiful small town.
Yeah, it's
so all of these occur rough, like from like once a year, basically. So it's a lot. Here we go. Jason Ellis, May 25th, 2013. Jason is described as like very silly, lighthearted. Like he was the guy that was going to make you laugh. He was like a practical joker, you know, like he would play like little silly pranks on people, like really harmless, like people genuinely thought that they were funny, you know. Yeah. Like he was that kind of guy. In fact, so they do like a Christmas party every year, right? And it's all like everybody gets dressed up, looking nice, all that kind of stuff for the whole department. And so Jason decided that he was gonna do an ugly sweater contest. And basically escalated this ugly sweater contest until one year he just shows up in like a full like elf outfit.
He committed to the bit.
He really did. I mean, it was a whole thing. So that was just the kind of guy that Jason was. Also, he spent time on a farm team for the majors. So he was real into baseball. That was like his sport, you know, like that's what he did. He lived and breathed baseball. That's what everybody says. That was his passion. And Jason happened to be the canine officer for the Bardstown Police Department. And the night of May 25th, Jason was actually not in his normal SUV where he could take his dog with him. So, I don't know if you guys know this. Canine SUVs have provisions to keep the dog safe,
right,
in the back. To where, like, if they were to get in a crash, high-speed chase, something like that, that the dog would still be safe. They're not going to get thrown all around. That kind of thing. So because Jason was not in his normal SUV, he was taking a pool car. And so you're looking at like a normal cruiser. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like not.
Have we seen why?
Because his was in the shop.
Okay.
And so he was just in the pool car for that shift until his was out. I don't know if it needed like an oil change. I don't know if it needed some body work.
Makes sense.
Miscellaneous. But it's at the police lot. It's in the shop, so he's in his pool car, so his dog is at home that night, so he didn't have his canine.
Which is different from normal.
That his was normal shit, yeah.
Unplanned.
It would have been off of his normal routine.
Right. Okay.
And so, that night, Jason goes to the ball field, and he coaches his son's Little League game in his police uniform.
My dad's done it.
Yep. And then shortly thereafter, he ends up getting dispatched and he has to go. So his wife packs up the boys and goes home. And around 11:30, Jason calls his wife, check in, say love you, night. You know, she's going to bed, that kind of thing. And she says everything's normal. Nothing's weird. And Jason makes one arrest that night before going home. He gets off the BG, which the BG is what the locals refer to the Bluegrass Parkway as. Okay. It's so much easier to just say the BG. So that's from here on out, when I say BG, we're talking about the Bluegrass Parkway, okay? So he gets off the Bluegrass Parkway, the BG exit to go home, and this is exit 34. And as he comes around, so this is like one of those spiral kind of looking exits where like you go
like the clover
like down
ones.
And around. Yeah. And it kind of goes between like these two, almost like there's like woods on one side and there's like a rock wall on the other side. And I couldn't really tell too much if there was like a rock wall on both sides, but it seems pretty like hemmed in.
Okay.
Okay. So like you're just going to go through on this exit. There's not a whole lot of shoulder to either side.
And that's just an exit. So there's no reason to be coming through there unless you're getting off of that exit.
Off of the BG on exit 34. So as he comes around, he comes up on these tree limbs in the road. And it was kind of positioned in a way to where like you could have drove around it. But Jason's a police officer. Like, so he pulls over and he pulls his car kind of blocking the lane and flips his lights on because safety. He doesn't have like his sirens or anything on. He's just got his lights on so people can see that he's like blocking the road, right? And gets out and goes to move these limbs. And these limbs look to be freshly cut. Okay. Move these limbs out of the roadway. And as he does, he bends over and Jason gets shot. And it's unclear how many times he shot because he shot with a shotgun.
Ooh, okay.
So really hard to say, yes. Right? Because yes. Like if you're getting sprayed with pellets, who knows if that's two shots? Who knows if that's four? You know, who knows? And so where he was shot was actually, because remember, he's still in his uniform. He's only signed off on dispatch. He's not actually out of his uniform yet. He's hit in the side, like in the gap between the Kevlar. So he does get peppered some in his vest, but it goes up under his arm, and his upper arm, his forearm. It gets the side of his face and his scalp. So, like, just one whole side of his body because he's bent over picking up a tree limb. So, his arm's up, right?
Oh, okay.
So, it just peppers all under.
Down his side.
Right.
Okay.
And he actually collapses with the tree limbs on his leg. And, like, one was, like, still in his hand. So, I don't think he ever saw this person.
Right. It sounds like he was legitimately just bent over picking up these tree limbs and had no clue.
Yeah. Okay. And so, there is a show that I watched for this called The Disappearance of Crystal Rogers. And in that show, they have like an analyst come out or whatever. And they show you a lot of footage of the scene, right? And there's this large, like I said, rock bank where somebody totally could have stood on top of that rock bank, bang, bang, shot Jason, and hightailed it the fuck out of there, right? So I don't like. I have a hard time believing if he thought anything sinister was up that he would have exited that police cruiser.
Well, and it says right here, police said Ellis never fired his service weapon.
He never even reached for it.
It was still holstered, yeah. So he had, I'm sitting here looking at pictures. It looks like there's.
Yeah. So you see what I'm saying. Yeah. There's, and we'll post this picture too. But there's, you come off, you go around the curve, and he's kind of like in the curve. And his, like I said, his police cruiser's blocking part of the lane where he would be pulling the tree limbs off the road. And he's just laying there in a pool of blood. And some citizens actually come up on him. It was this guy who just got off work and was driving home, got off on this exit, sees the police car, pulls up, thinks, oh, this is fucking weird. Like, yeah. Where's the cop? Gets out, finds Jason on the ground. And these people actually use his radio to call dispatch and say, officer down. And they have to tell him, you know, all the stuff. And then they get there. And so the coroner is called in and all that on the officer down. Other counties are, like, notified of everything so that they're starting to be alert, you know, because officer gets murdered, everybody's hackles goes up.
Well, and something about this scene, there's no reason for a tree branch to be in the road.
Well, they were freshly cut. Exactly.
Right. Somebody's like, the branches here. The trees are not close enough to the road that this could have just fallen.
Also, they're big enough that, like, if somebody were to lose these off the back of a truck,
yeah,
you would know. Right? So, what the hell? This seems like an ambush to me. This was planned. And on the day that you didn't have the canine, somebody had to know this man's schedule to a freaking T, right?
That's why I was saying, like, this is different than his normal routine.
Right.
Somebody would have had to feel like, no, that's not his normal behavior right. For the day.
And so, after all of the officer down, the chief gets woke up at 3 a.m. by one of his officers calling him and saying, they killed him, chief, they killed him. And when the chief's like, what, who is they? The officer's like, I don't know, they killed him. And so then he gets all of the information and he heads out to the scene. And he said that he remembers he just like knelt down and like put his hand on Jason's knee and was like, what the hell happened here?
Yeah.
You know, it's not often that like an officer is killed in the line of duty in Bardstown, Kentucky, you know? So this kind of shook everybody up, right? Come to find out, there were no dash cams or body cams in 2013 for the Bardstown Police Office, which, again, small police force, probably not a budget for it. That was new technology at the time. You know, I get it. There immediately is some rumored involvement from a local gang called the Big Money Gang. The police chief is quoted as saying that these are just kids who watch too much TV and are kind of just burnouts. But there is rumors that they had involvement in drug trafficking, and Jason is the canine drug officer. So, you know, people are like, oh, well, maybe he arrested the wrong guy or whatever. But the leader was already in jail the night that Jason was murdered.
And if they're just young punks, drug trafficking could be a little bit.
I'm thinking they're probably selling a pound of weed a month. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like
that could be fluffed.
Yeah. So I'm not sure that there's a whole lot of validity to that, but hey, I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. There is also a little bit of like, who did he have disputes with in the department? Just because of the way that it was all set up. But again, Jason was loved by everybody. Like, he was the guy that everybody liked.
Right.
You know? So, like, everybody's like, no, I cannot think of a single person who would have it out for Jason Ellis, you know? So, almost a year goes by. And in April of 2014, Kathy and Samantha Netherland don't show up for school. Now, Kathy is a special ed teacher. Sam is a 10th grader who just got accepted to a very prestigious, I think it's like a magnet school associated with the university. It was like for very highly academic achieving students only are going to go there. Okay. Right. And everybody's super proud of her for that. She just picked out her prom dress. She's going to go to prom. I mean, kids on the way up. I mean, she's having a
teenager.
Great. Yeah. She's getting ready for college, doing all that kind of thing. Now, a year earlier, they had just lost their dad and Kathy's husband to colon cancer. So they've been grieving that the oldest daughter is at college. You know, they're just trying to move on with their lives right now.
But it sounded like they were doing really, really well in spite of that.
Yeah, yes. It sounded to me like Samantha put everything into her school and just kind of tried to focus on that. And she achieved what she was looking to do. And then Kathy, who is a special ed teacher, has a great relationship with everybody at school. Nobody has a bad word to say about her. I mean, says she's a great woman, great teacher. Her kids loved her. You know, not a bad word to be said.
Not high risk people.
No, not at all. Very low risk lifestyle. Like I said, Kathy and Sam fail to show up for school, which is highly unlike them. And so eventually, Kathy's dad, Sam's granddad, ends up going to their house and he actually finds them both dead inside their home. And so Kathy is in the living room and she is shot multiple times and her throat is slashed. And then Sam, who by many accounts bore the brunt of the violence, was stabbed, her throat is slashed, and her head is almost beaten in.
All of those things in themselves would be deadly, so that's definitely overkill for all three of them.
And what we know about killers, Kathy being shot is much less personal than Sam being stabbed.
And they brought a knife and a gun?
Which leads me to believe that it may be multiple people.
Right. That doesn't sound like
one. Now, and there have been rumors like they put a cell phone jammer at the front door, which would explain why they never got a call out to 911.
What is a cell phone jammer?
scrambles the signal, so you can't get a signal.
That's like a real thing.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. So there's been all kinds of stuff like that. Apparently, the police asked the older daughter about chairs, about them maybe being tied up to chairs or where chairs were in the house previously. A couple things like that. So I don't think this was a quick thing.
No.
This sounds like torture. Unfortunately. Yeah. I don't think that they died easily. Now, the family these days tends to stay very tight-lipped. The oldest daughter did a couple of interviews in the beginning. She doesn't really talk much anymore.
Because a crazy murderer is...
I mean, I would be terrified. Yeah. I don't blame her. I mean, of course, people were like, oh, she must have had something to do with it. She didn't have nothing to do with it, y'all. I don't think she did at all. She has now lost her entire family, and I think that we need to cut her some fucking slack.
And it's an open investigation, so I'm not going to get in the way of that.
The police do say that they are asking for some help finding a 12 or 13 model black Impala. Now, remember, this is 2014, so this is a fairly new black Impala. There's footage of this car, like, around the scene at the time, and I think somebody else had said, like, a neighbor had said, like, oh, there was this car out at this time. And so they were looking for this car in connection to this case of who had this car. But they never find it.
Okay.
And then there was one other really weird thing. That in December of 2013, so just, 5 months earlier, Kathy makes this Facebook post about, we were in the house earlier and we heard a noise and we thought, oh, the cats must have knocked something over. And so we go check and there's nothing amiss. And then later we go to run an errand and the whole storm door is shattered. Now, like there's like a glass door, like there's your front door and then there's a glass door that we in the South like to call a storm door.
Well, and those like are meant to be a door. So it's glass, but those are normally pretty hard to break.
Yeah. Like I know the one at my house is like plexiglass, right? So it's, I mean, like you can like wiggle it.
Yeah.
But they open up the door and the storm door is just shattered. And so they clean up all the glass and she's like, well, I guess we'll go get a replacement, you know, weird things, you know, ha ha ha. But that's weird.
That is really weird because something would have to hit it hard to break it.
Right.
And I assume they didn't find like a rock or something because you would have seen it laying there and she would have been like.
Right. And she's not like somebody threw a rock through our door.
It's December, so nobody's mowing. So a rock didn't accidentally get thrown into it.
Right.
That is bizarre. And that's not a big enough deal that I would, like, file a police report over either.
Yeah, I would just chalk it. I would be like, well, that's freaking weird, you know. But I wouldn't, you know, necessarily think. No, I also have cameras everywhere. So if somebody did hit my door and shatter it, I would know. Yeah. But again, this is 2014. Like, I don't.
They didn't
have access. Like they couldn't just go order a Google camera that works with all their other cameras back then. You know what I mean? Took a little more than that. So, Kathy and Sam's murders are still unsolved. Now we go ahead to the disappearance of Crystal Rogers. Crystal disappeared on July 3rd, 2015. Now this is the case that we probably have the most information about out of all of them. And Crystal was a mom of five, and she was dating a very successful builder/landlord locally. His name was Brooks Houck. Now, Brooks met Crystal after Crystal rented a house from him. And they, you know, went on a date, and they started, you know, a relationship and all that. And there were several instances that kind of gave her family the ick, okay?
Red flag.
Big red flags. And there was one instance where Brooks, I guess, had left the kids alone at home for a long time.
More than acceptable.
Yeah, enough for the kids to get freaked out. Yeah. And so they called their grandma, who they're very close with, and they were like, grandma, this is weird. Like,
I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah. And so by the time she gets over there, Brooks is back home. But she kind of, you know, she gives him the what for. She gives him a talking to.
Where the fuck have you been?
Yeah, like, you can't just leave these kids here however long you want to. You know, like, this is not acceptable. Oh, apparently, Brooks does not like that at all. And tells Crystal that her mom disrespected him in his own home. And that he won't be going around there for a while. And he doesn't go over there for months.
Narcissist.
And then there's another instance, well, actually, it's several, where, like, he'll, like, pick a fight. They'll get in a fight or an argument before going over to, like, one of Crystal's family functions, and Brooks won't come in.
That sounds like a form of isolation.
He won't come in. He's not, like, he doesn't want to see anybody. He's not going to do it.
Brooks is a bitch.
Brooks is a bitch. And then there is what I refer to as the clay pigeon incident, where this boils my blood a little bit, y'all. In the South, we shoot clay pigeon for sport. You get to shoot your gun. You get to have a little target practice on something that's moving. It's a good time, right? And so
Southern boys eat it up.
They sure do, especially if there's the bird hunters. So Brooks switched Crystal specifically shot out to something that would kick harder, and she was not aware of this. And so when she went to shoot and it kicked really hard, it actually bruised the shit out of her because she wasn't ready for it. And then later, when she went to her parents' house, you know, her mom saw this huge bruise all over her and was like, "Crystal, what happens?" And she's like, "Well, Brooks did this, and he thought it was really funny."
Don't play games with fucking guns.
And Sherry's like, "Crystal, that is not funny. I don't like that. That was cruel. Like, that was mean." Like, she just thought that that was, like, really out of pocket, basically. And I tend to agree, like, don't do that. So, the family is already suspect of this man, right?
Rightfully so.
Well, then Crystal gets pregnant. And she moves in full-time with Brooks. And then here comes one of the most bizarre parts. Brooks runs for sheriff.
Brooks, the landlord slash builder.
Yes.
Runs for sheriff.
He runs for sheriff.
Oh.
Backed, of course, by his brother, Nick. Guess where Nick works?
I'm guessing Bardstown Police Department.
He sure does. Guess who Nick shared a shift with?
Ooh,
Jason Ellis.
Yes.
And so, strike two.
So I'm guessing he does not get elected chair.
No. Okay. So then we come to 4th of July weekend, 2015. Crystal's family starts trying to get a hold of her after one of her daughters contacts her grandma again and says, "Grandma, I don't know where mom is." And so Sherry, Crystal's mom, you know, contacts her and she's like, "Crystal, you need to get in touch with somebody." And her daughter, Brooke, is contacting Crystal, and her son, Casey, is contacting Crystal. And her daddy, Crystal's dad, Tommy, is also calling. Everybody's trying to get a hold of Crystal, and right. She has not returned anyone's call. And so the family's like, by Sunday, they're worried. This is not like her. This is not normal. And so Sherry, Crystal's mom, decides that she is going to go down to the police station. And on the way, don't you know who she fucking sees in the gas station parking lot other than Brooke got dang Hout?
I'd be like, toot, toot, beep, beep. "Hey, Brooks, looking for you."
Yeah.
"Where the fuck is Crystal?"
She does. She pulls over. She hops out of the car. She said, "Brooks, where's Crystal?" And he says, "Oh, well, Crystal's done run off like she does. I woke up and she went home." And Sherry's like, "Okay, well, where's the baby?" And Brooks is like, "He's right here with me." Sherry sees him in the back seat, and she knows instantly this ain't good. Because Brooks never had that baby by himself.
He's the kind of dad that says he's babysitting his kids.
Exactly. So instantly, Sherry's like, "No." And so she says, "Well, Brooks, I'm going to the police station to report Crystal missing because she hasn't contacted anybody." And he says, "Do whatever you need to do," and drives off, goes home. And so then Sherry and her husband, Tommy, go down to the police station, start trying to file a missing persons report on Crystal. And while they're there, they get word that somebody has spotted what they think is Crystal's car on the BG. And so Tommy and Casey, so that's Crystal's dad and brother, they head out to the BG to go see if this is in fact Crystal's car. So they roll up on it, and Casey said as soon as they come up on that car, they knew it was Crystal's. And they got out, saw she's nowhere around, you know, and walk up to it, and they made sure not to touch a single thing on that car.
Very smart. Very, very smart.
But they can see in the windows that her keys are there, her purse is in there, her phone is in there. The battery is dead on the phone, but it's all in the car, right? And Crystal drove in a pretty unique way, okay? When she drove, she would lean the seat almost all the way back, and she drove almost laying down. Like, she would kick her leg up.
I do that.
And when they got up to the car, the seat was all the way up.
Well, and especially, even if she's just going to, like, disappear and leave her car or something, and her phone battery's already dead, so she's like, fuck this phone, I can't even use this phone, I don't need it. You're still going to take your purse to get help.
Right.
And I would still take my phone, because everybody would have a charger, you would think. Right. But you're not going to just leave those things abandoned in your car on the side of the road. That's right. Not going to happen.
Well, Casey says that there was a flat tire on the car, right? But not so flat that she wouldn't have kept driving, because Crystal had gotten a flat on the BG before. She said it was not safe, and she drove so far on this flat tire that she bent the rim because she was not going to stop on the BG. So she wouldn't have stopped there, especially if that tire was drivable.
Right.
Casey tends to believe Crystal was never in that car. He thinks somebody dumped that car there.
That's what it sounds like to me.
Now, the police end up just giving this car back to Crystal's family, back to the Ballards.
Oh.
Just give this huge piece of evidence back to them. And when they open it up, everything, all the contents are in there.
Like, they took no evidence.
None. And there, it doesn't even really look. The only place that has, like, fingerprint residue is, like, one spot on the back. So when you dust for fingerprints, it leaves a powder residue all over everything. And there was only one spot on the back.
Well, and not just that. I was just looking. She was at mile marker 14.
Yep.
He was at exit 34.
Yes.
So, like, within just a few years, that's a missing person's car found on the BG, an officer killed on the BG. How would the police department immediately not take that somewhat seriously?
You would think, right? Well, it's unfortunate. So, the disappearance of Crystal Rogers, that show actually has an expert come out and they collect evidence forensically from this car, and not a whole lot comes of it, but they do divulge that apparently in Kentucky, there's a limit on how many pieces of evidence you can test.
Forensically. There should never be any type of limit like that. That's crazy.
So, I mean, there are cases out there where half the evidence hasn't been tested.
That's insanity. How could they even have something like that?
That is not great.
No.
So they do, you know, obviously independent testing, but not a ton comes from it. And again, this is several years after this car had supposedly already been processed. So who knows, you know? Because evidence does degrade over time, especially if it's been sitting in a hot
garage. That's what I was trying to say.
Garage.
Store. Yeah. You know, because obviously they weren't taking it too seriously.
Right. So Brooks is eventually interviewed by the police. And he says that the last time he saw Crystal, they went out to his farm, his family farm, to feed cows in the evening time. And then they lit a fire for a while, and then they went on a walk. Now, it was raining the whole weekend of July 4th that year.
And why would you build a fire in July at night? It's still hot.
Who knows? Well, and apparently they had the baby. Why are you taking a walk with the baby at, like, he says that they don't get home till like 12:20 a.m. What are you doing?
walking in the rain in the woods with a toddler.
At like 10, 11 at night. And even one of the police officers in the interview was like, Brooks, I'm not judging your parenting or anything, but
why the fuck was this baby awake?
Why is this kid out at like midnight? And he's like, oh, he's wide awake at midnight. That's like his afternoon.
He's a party boy.
He's like, he's so used to staying up with Crystal.
He likes taking long walks at midnight in the pouring rain.
If you like pina coladas, you know?
I think you said you went to bed first. Do you remember about how long you were home before you went to bed?
I went to bed immediately.
So when you guys got in, you went and did your nightly routine and you're going to bed. I think you told me that she stayed up and Eli, did he stay up as well?
He was up.
And what was she, where was she at? When
if there's any activity going on in the house, he doesn't want to go to bed. Mm-hmm. If everybody turned the lights out and we just go out in the bed, he's going to follow us in there, lay down with us. But if I go to bed and she stays up, he's not going to come in there to bed till all the lights are out and then she goes to bed. If I was doing something out there and she was in the bed, he's going to stay up with me until the lights are out, until I go in there. Do you see what I'm...
Sure.
So
he's going to stay up with Mom. Right. So, and before you went to bed, or as your... Any conversation, I know you told me that you all had a conversation Friday evening sometime about the kids. We'll talk about that in a minute, but you said you all talked about the kids Friday evening. Does that conversation bleed over to when you get home, or is that conversation done?
No, whenever I got home, I went to bed. I mean, it was relatively, quickly when I got in there. Okay. The conversation does not bleed over.
Okay. So you go to bed, she stays up. What's she doing?
She's just on her phone playing, I don't know what game, but she normally plays a game. Right. Some kind. She's got several of them on there, but I don't know which one.
Okay. So she's on her phone, messing around, doing whatever, and you go to bed. Do you know what time Eli came to bed, or she put him into bed?
I don't know. I normally go to bed earlier than that, so when I went to sleep, I'm a pretty heavy sleeper. I wouldn't have noticed, if he crawled in there,
That whole story never made any fucking sense to me. But in the middle of this interview, Brooks gets a call from none other than Bardstown police officer and his older brother, Nick Houck.
Ring, ring, it's your brother. Shut the fuck up.
That's essentially what Nick says.
Oh.
He says, bruh, don't say anything else. Like, get out of there. Like, you can kind of hear on the audio of the interview, like, you can tell the tone of Nick. You can't really tell what he's saying.
Yeah.
But you can tell the tone of what he's saying is basically like, well, how long have they had you here? Blah, blah. And also, Brooke, you just have to hear the way Brooke speaks. It's either genuine or it's rehearsed. I feel like it's rehearsed. But he hangs up the phone and he goes, yeah, he thinks you're going to fuck me is what he thinks you're going to do.
Don't tell them he said that.
Right. And the officer goes, who's he? I don't know who he is, Brooks. And he goes, my brother, Nick.
Oh, the guy that works for our fucking police department?
Exactly.
Thank you for telling us that, actually.
So then, of course, he's like, yeah, y'all ask me what you gotta ask me, and then I gotta go, basically.
I mean, he's not under arrest, so
technically. No, exactly. You can go at any time.
Hello?
No.
I'm up here. I know that you didn't know. I'm up here in this interview with the Detective Snow. I've been up here a good little while. I'm filling out this this statement here and everything. Are you telling me that's what I need to do? I know that. But the way that I look at it is, I'm innocent. I ain't done nothing wrong. I know you told me innocent people have got jammed up, but if you're telling me to leave, I'll get up and leave. If you want me to, if you want me to. I know I'm going through a lot, but I'm trying to get this guy to help me. I don't think she's ran off with some other guy. I don't believe that. You can't make me think that. No. Yeah, so do I. I'll do exactly what you're telling me to do right now. Do you want me to get up and leave? Man, I don't think these people have got a vindictive just to skin me for no reason. Man, this is not their family. This is not. He thinks y'all are gonna fuck is what he thinks.
I don't know who he is.
Nick, my brother. I'm not. He just said just to keep sitting up here. He said give a statement, do an interview, whatever I gotta do it. But he said, no, just to keep just letting them just beat you to death over this right here. Just ask what you gotta ask and let you know.
And you tell me.
You see what I mean? He knows more about this than I do. You see?
And have I told you that I'm for you?
Yes, you have.
I said, what did I say? My job is to find Crystal, right?
That's right.
However that happens, my job is to find her. Whether
so then, of course, the police won't talk to Nick. Won't get his ass in an interview, yeah. Right? To be like, so what are you doing? Why are you not having, like, here's the thing.
Why
the
are you
says,
inserting yourself in this fucking investigation?
Well, the chief says, like, as an officer, he expects you to cooperate fully with any investigation, no matter what it is.
Right.
Like, whether it involves your family or not, you are expected to cooperate to the fullest extent, right? Because, duh.
Story.
Yeah, because, and so, the chief gets word that Nick is not cooperating. He won't come in for these interviews. He won't talk to them. He's making himself scarce. And so, he basically goes and jerks the knot in his tail and is like, no. That's an order. You're going to go do this interview.
And, like, these detectives are his peers and probably in the hierarchy of the police department, his superiors.
His superiors, right.
So, what are you doing?
Exactly. He goes in for this interview, and it does not go well. He gets angry. I'm talking.
Not making yourself look great, Nick.
No, big man. We're talking, like, anger issues, man. At one point is like, yeah, I'm upset because you're calling me a fucking liar. And I don't like it when people call
but with
me a
like
liar.
Law enforcement training, you would think he would know better than to act like that.
Like, you know how an interrogation works. Right. Like, clearly if they're making something up or trying to trip you up, just tell them you know that.
And
they'll
the
change
fuck up.
It. Yeah.
Like you told your brother to shut up. You shut up.
Just shut up. Yeah. Well, and of course, before that, everything is, I don't know. I don't know. I don't remember that. I don't recall that. I don't know. Right.
Ought to be thinking in your head, how am I going to save face with the guys I work with? How am I going to, you know, explain this to my family? How you've got to have those things going through your head. If you're a normal functioning person like we all are, then it's natural for us to feel that way. It's natural for us to be inquisitive, you know, especially as police officers. You know, we always want to know what's going on. We're like the neighborhood watch 24/7, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the way we are. Now, I just can't expect that you would forget all those details, you know, being as you're a police officer and sitting here talking to you and seeing how you interact with people. I just find that very hard to believe.
I'm sorry you find it hard to believe. That's the way it is. I mean, it's just, that's it. I mean,
a month ago, I would expect you not to remember something. But a week ago, with all this national media attention, and all these questions probably being asked by people out here on the street and all these rumor mills going around, you know, I would expect you to remember that.
But at the same time, he hadn't really came to me, you know? I mean,
you talked to him that day, you know?
I'm sure we talked briefly, but like I said, I mean, we haven't really discussed anything, so therefore I don't have a lot of details to give you.
But we're not asking you details about necessarily what he did more than details about what you did, with details about you going to the farm and him being there,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and you all leaving hence you being there and you leaving.
We would expect we'd just go back to this time, y'all arriving at the farm at 8:11 p.m. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's getting to be summertime, but, you know, that doesn't leave you a whole lot of daylight for fishing or tooling around, and it gets dark about 9 o'clock.
9:30.
So, but you're there till 11, almost 11:30.
Yeah, but I mean, with all this going on, you know, I mean, it's just, like I say, it's just a good way to go out there and get rid of stress.
Well, what did you do to get rid of stress? I mean, what did he do to get rid of stress? Like,
oh, y'all shoot some clay pigeons or something? Or no, I mean, like I told you before, I mean, I'll go out there, I ride the four-wheeler religiously. You know, I'll go to the lake, and like the last hour before it gets dark, that's about the best time to go fishing.
Sure.
So, I mean, I understand y'all's perspective, but you got it wrong.
So he's not cooperating still. So he actually ends up getting himself fired for that.
I mean, reasonable, though.
And this chief goes in on this motherfucker. Let me tell you something. He tells him, "It gives me nothing but pleasure to take this badge away from you because you don't deserve to wear this uniform."
He will never be in law enforcement again. Blacklisted. Well,
but mic drop.
Yeah.
He done with that ass. Let me tell you something. So Nick gets himself ousted, and then Sherry Ballard, Crystal's mom, ring-a-ding-ding, contacts the people at Nancy Grace. And Nancy Grace, of course, picked up the story, and she said, "We gonna run with it." She gets a hold of Brooke's ass, and Brooke's, on her show, says, "Well, I thought she went to her cousin's house. She went to her cousin's house all the time. Well, like, whenever they got in an argument, she'd just leave and go to the cousin's house." And the cousin was like, "She maybe came to my house like one time, two times. Like, it wasn't a regular occurrence." And then he also says that the reason that he hasn't joined the family for searches is because he's done all his efforts with the sheriff's department. Most of the searches for Crystal are led by her family. It's volunteers that they put together. And in fact, the first one was like the day they found the car. They went out and searched like from where her car was, like all the land adjacent.
Which makes sense, because if she had wandered off into the woods or something, like, she would be right there.
Right, exactly. Like if she was having like a medical event or something like that. And listen, Team Crystal has been out cheer looking for stuff. They've brought in canines. They've brought in divers. Hundreds and hundreds of acres of land has been searched for Crystal, and she's still not around. We still don't know where her body is. Eventually, Crystal is declared dead because, again, there's no trace of her anywhere.
Well, and she has 5 kids that probably get benefits right from that.
Well, and a couple of them were teenagers. I'm sure they're looking at going to school and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So another interesting thing that happens is, so Sherry, Crystal's mom, and Tommy have these missing posters of Crystal posted everywhere in town. And they keep noticing that they're being taken down, and they're even finding them like in the trash. Okay. Brooke's girlfriend, his new girlfriend, is later arrested as being the one taking them down.
Like, this is the thing. If you're all about Brooks, you're dating Brooks, you believe Brooks, that's fine. But at least have enough respect to Crystal to not do that shit. Because either way, he had a child with Crystal.
Yeah.
She deserved to go to jail.
Well, and here's another really... It either has a lot to do with this or nothing to do with this, okay? Crystal's aunt was actually murdered. So this is her dad's sister. Was murdered in 1979. She was 7 months pregnant.
That is so sad. And that is crazy that Tommy lost not only his sister, but his daughter.
Well, and she was killed by her husband. She was shot with a shotgun. He burned her body and then buried her. So he completely mutilated her and dumped her car in a body of water. He put like a rock on the gas pedal and sent it in.
Like the movies.
And the husband was only convicted after the accomplice that helped him bury her body rolled over on him because he got arrested for another crime.
Oh, he's still no hero.
Right. And apparently, Brooks had been asking questions not long before Crystal disappeared, like out in public, like stopped her other aunt, Tommy's other sister, out in public and was like asking her about it.
Before Crystal was missing?
Yes.
Ooh, not looking good for you.
Like wanted details. And one of the searchers that helped look for Crystal did say to Tommy, like, we should check where they found your sister's car or your sister's remains. And Tommy was like, I can't do that.
I don't blame him at all.
I don't blame him at all. Over the years, it seems like Tommy was probably the person that had the most information about Crystal's case. He had a whole box of information. I'm talking, he has timetables. He has surveillance video footage from, like, tracking Crystal and tracking things that he thinks has to do with this. And he had just a ton of information. But the problem is that on November 19th of 2016, Tommy goes out for a morning hunt with his grandson. This was routine. This is something that they did all the time. He pulls up to their property, which is not far from his son Casey's house. He'd owned this plot of land for like 14 years. Like, this is where they go to hunt. Okay, this is his family's land, right? And this piece of property also happens to back up to the Bluegrass Parkway. So it's also like the fence line and then up an embankment and there's the BG.
The BG sounds like it might be a portal to hell.
It's something. It's a highway to hell for sure. So Tommy gets out with his grandson. They're going to go pick out the place that they want to hunt today. They're going to walk in, and as they're walking around to go, like, head out through the field, Tommy puts his arm out and stops his grandson and then throws up his rifle on his shoulder and looks through the scope at something, and then Tommy is shot. And Casey, his son, actually heard the shot at his house and remembers being like, oh, dang, Dad, already? You know? Like, yeah. You shot one? So when they go out there and investigate, they find this hole in the trees, for lack of a better word. It's like a little gap. And it looks like the limbs have been freshly cut. It looks like somebody has made a window in this tree line. And you can see the BG from it.
Yeah.
And this is the same direction that Tommy pointed his scope before he was shot. So it's like he saw something. Like he was trying to look and see what was out
right.
there.
Right. Use his little scope as a
binocular. As basically a binocular, yeah. And look and see, like what was that?
Right.
You know? Now, Tommy has to be related to Crystal's case. Has to be. Now, whether he was too close to figuring it out, whether he was just the loudest voice for Crystal, I'm not really sure why you killed Tommy. You know?
Well, and like the little note that I was writing over here is, I don't understand how if Nick was fired, they would not open...
like an internal affairs investigation
on him, because that's mighty close to somebody who was missing that you're acting crazy about. So, yes, that's awesome that they fired him and they told him to fuck off, but why did you not look into that further?
Right, exactly. And, like, so you just fired him and that was it?
Right.
Or, like, is it because you don't have enough evidence? Like, that's what I'm saying. It's like, in these cases, I feel like it's been long enough. Either give us some more information so that all of us little internet sleuths can do what we do, or, you know, make some moves. Like, it's time. Like, I feel like these are so solvable, but it's like...
But then again, with Tommy, the only evidence is one bullet. Unless somebody right. said something to somebody, it's all just guessing. Like, yeah, there's plenty of reasons to kill him, and it's very obvious who had reasons to kill him. But unless they've told someone that, or you find,
but you got evidence, everybody's already looking at you, and you got that big of balls, right, to go kill this man.
Which I think they really did, and I think they did it in a way they knew they couldn't get caught. That's crazy. What the fuck is going on in Bardstown?
What the fuck, Bardstown?
Yeah, y'all are not okay.
Really not okay. But yeah, y'all, I mean, I encourage y'all to get loud. I encourage y'all to dig into this. I mean, this is something that is, there's some suspect going on here.
I mean, cases like this only get solved if they're talked about.
Really, truthfully. There is a full podcast. It's called Bardstown and Beyond. I encourage you to go listen to that. Season one is all about Bardstown. And then, like I said, the disappearance of Crystal Rogers. I think you can find that on Peacock and Hulu. There, it may be a couple other places, but I'm not sure.
That's a lot of unsolved cases for such a small area. That's a lot of murders alone.
It's another Jennings. More, like, yeah. Like, what the fuck is going on?
Right. Like, that's a ton of murders just in itself. Or, you know, Crystal's not murdered, but can be assumed to be. But like,
well,
that's
she's
a
declared
lot.
Dead, so.
Right. So, but for these people to have been murdered and then it's unsolved, like, where's the incompetency then? Because, like, obviously there's an issue.
Right. And the one that really, I mean, like, I can see where Jason, Crystal, and Tommy could be linked. But the one that baffles me is Sam and Kathy.
Yeah. I can't find any links in my head with them, with the other victims. But, and there had to be two people there. Maybe that was just the young gangster thugs.
Well, and here's the thing about that is, like, if the young gangster thugs can go in and brutally murder a mom and her daughter, then they for sure can kill Jason Ellis.
I mean, yeah. Very true.
So, I mean, that's one that really stumps me.
Yeah, that's wild. Tell us what you think.
There's a lot to consider in this one.
Yeah.
It's a thinker. All right, y'all.
All right. Tell us what you think on our episode 22, Bardstown 2.0. Thanks, guys.
Don't whistle in the woods at night.
Bye, y'all.